Chapter 13. Tony wasn't certain whether he was alive or dead. One moment, he recalled being thrown from the dam, hitting the water, and then bucking as his brain filled with the sound of some great crash and the blinding light of stars. The next, he saw himself from the outside, bloated and swollen and floating in some vast expanse of water that rolled on indefinitely. He hated to admit it, but staring at the sad sight of his body, he couldn't help but feel pathetic, especially when he realized that this was the result of his botched attempt to overturn the plot that Orlando's handlers had been brewing. Maybe this was what came of it, he realized. Maybe his waterlogged corpse, with its blackened eye and its tattered jacket and ripped pants and uselessly dangling limbs, maybe all of this was just a physical manifestation of who he was at heart. No action hero who would right the world's wrongs, but just some dopey engineer who'd gotten in over his head and failed the world. He'd picked a fight with a man named Mars, who might as well have been the avatar of that very god, and what did he have to show for it but the broken, bloody wreck of his body? Worse even than that, he'd pulled Kaz, Lisa, Clemson, and who knew how many others in over their heads, too, and in turn burdened them with a debt they were soon going to pay in full. In his vain attempt to address his own guilt and failure to protect his protege, he'd gone and done nothing except sentence others to death. Maybe, if this was the natural result of his meddling, Tony thought, it would be better if he simply gave up, disappeared, stopped dragging other innocents into this nightmare.
I wouldn't think like that if I were you.
Like a knife, that familiar voice cut through Tony's morbid self-pity and his vision of himself. No longer floating in that endless expanse and staring at himself, suddenly Tony found himself back in his own body and sitting in the passenger side of an open-topped jeep that Major Holstadt, his erstwhile mentor, the man who had shepherded him into his military career, dead over a decade now, drove through the desert. Only Tony was himself, as young as he had been when first deployed to Afghanistan, and the Major was not the miserable old man he had seen on his deathbed, eaten by cancer and regret, but the steely-eyed, steel-jawed man with a penchant for pipe tobacco who'd taken him under his wing during that deployment. For a time they rode in silence, the monotony of the tires' spinning broken up only by little hums from the Major, before his mentor decided to speak. With all the noise, or maybe it was just the peculiar nature of dreams, Tony couldn't hear what he said, but could somewhat guess, at least, at the meaning of his ramblings, something about pride and service and days of fire, something about the way the West was won and the choices not made. Suddenly, though, the car broke to a stop, and the Major's voice became distinct as he explained to Tony that all of life was a giant perpetual motion machine, so large and so complex you could never understand how it worked or what it was doing or how you even got to be staring at it in the first place.
No, kid, but you gotta stop thinking everything's some engineering problem to be solved. I seen you, the way you look at things, at people, like they're little closed systems you can just neatly box up. It's bigger than that. It's so big that there's no way of even knowing which way the cogs are turning, or where the power's been generated, or which way the pipes are zigzagging. It's too big for that. And it's sure as shit bigger than you. So much bigger that before you even realize it, before you even see it so much as turn, well, one day, that machine's going to be staring you straight down, and you're going to realize that's where all those gears turning, and all that steam hissing, and all those pumping pistons and rumbling motors was always going to bring it. It was always bringing it to you. Also, it can belch that one simple question at you, right or wrong? And I promise you, when that happens, You're not going to have time to offer up some complicated response, full of theorems and equations and proofs.
In the dream, Tony raised his hand to disagree, but the major just slapped it down, shaking his head.
I know you're smart. I know you can talk your way out of just about anything. But the machine ain't looking for smart. It's looking for one simple question to one simple answer. Right or wrong? It ain't your duty to understand the machine. It ain't even your duty to figure out why it's wasting all this time asking you this question. Your only duty is to answer it correctly and pick right.
He went on to explain that it was no guarantee the machine would let you live when you did, of course. You could believe the answer with all your heart, live your life unfailingly loyal to your moral code, and still get scooped up and ground down. Likewise, you could go decades making the absolute worst of every choice and relationship you had. You could be a rat fucker of the highest order, the kind of guy to sell out his best friends to his worst enemies. Answer wrong and still get passed over. There was no guaranteed logic behind the machine's choices. But, and here Holstad removed his sunglasses, revealing behind them a surface every bit as reflective as the lenses he'd just removed, there was one thing that was guaranteed. Doomed or not, the final choice on how you answered rested with nobody but yourself. It was a scary thought, Tony's younger self objected, but one that the phantasmal major easily countered. Sure it was, but with everything else so uncertain about the machine's grand designs, what else was there to do? Right didn't always necessarily mean something obvious, like rejecting the devil when he came to you with a tempting offer, or throwing yourself in front of a train to help an old lady who'd fallen onto the tracks. Sometimes, it was as simple as walking forward, one step at a time, to accept your fault in a loss, or even to simply refuse to give up.
Ask me? That's the real weight of a man's worth,
Holstad's doppelganger said, as he brought his glasses back to rest on his nose.
Dying may sound hard when you're scared, but when you get past that, I imagine it's about the easiest thing a man can do. No, sir, but it's living. That's the hardest choice.
Tony's younger dream self moved to offer some small excuse for why he couldn't continue, but could only splutter, first his lungs and then his mouth, filling with water that built and built before spilling out in a waterfall onto the seat of the Jeep. In a frantic twirl, he moved his head outside of the car to throw up instead on the dry desert ground. Yet, for all the water he disgorged, he remained bloated, choking, coughing, spluttering for air. He wanted to breathe, but couldn't. Not until the major began to pound him on the back did the water disperse, and his breath, sharp, jagged, but so fresh, come surging back.